Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the coaching voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew. What a beautiful day.
It's okay. Great.
Pretty overcast. Not going to rain today. I think that's the only positive we can take from today. But there is a big positive we can take from today, and that is yesterday.
Absolutely.
Yes. I think we all know what happened yesterday, but that's what we're going to talk about. Not just that, actually. Do you know what? That, to a very small extent, there wasn't a great deal to talk about goalkeeper. In fact, no, there was a great deal to talk about.
Loads.
Jordan Pickford was fantastic yesterday. We're going to go into a bit of detail on that. But actually, probably more talking points goalkeeping-wise, I'd say, elsewhere for this particular show. But of course, we are going to talk about England a lot.
We are. What a night. What a night it was. And I am aware some listeners aren't from England.
True.
I think even the non-English listeners can appreciate what a performance that was from England and Mr. Pickford himself.
Indeed. So I'm going to talk about that in detail. You did mention coaching.
I did.
I did my first coaching session. So I used to do a bit of coaching. When I first retired, I did coaching for a couple of years. Stopped mainly because of injuries, I'd say. Like, as much as I enjoyed the coaching aspect, didn't feel great the next day. But I did my first coaching session. Coached Mr. David Button, of course, West Brom. Did coach him on Friday night. You came and watched, actually.
I did. I mean,
sounds a bit weird.
Yes, it does. Yeah. I was there for another reason, of course, working with the GK Icon Academies, but I was not just there to stand on the touchline and watch you serve David Button.
True, but it was fun.
It was. Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. He got a decent amount of work, I think. It was sort of semi or half me guiding the session, and there were some things that he wanted to do as well, which were very good. I think drills he must do with Gary Walsh, of course, his current goalkeeper coach. So a few drills that we've thrown in that he does with him, which were good. So yeah, it was a nice kind of 45-50 minute blow. They've got pre-season starting back this week, so it was good to get the gloves on again.
Do you know what I will say from the small bit of training that I did watch was that you can just tell when a goalkeeper is that next level. And when I say next level, I mean professional. Mm. You could just tell in the way that he was, his technique, you could just tell that he was a professional goalkeeper.
Yeah, no, brilliant. In terms of his shape, and I'm sure all you guys know a lot about David Button, but was he 6'4", 6'5", you know, moves so well. Beautiful strike of the ball as well. He did have a couple of questions when we first got there because I had no boots. And he did question the fact as to where my boots were. And I made it known that I coach in trainers, which is unusual. You know, I think a lot of you coaches listening in will be cringing right now at the thought of that. But I just about got away with the half volleys with trainers. Not great striking a ball off the deck, I'm going to be honest, with trainers.
I was quite concerned.
Yeah.
Because they weren't AstroTurf trainers either.
No. I'm using them for tennis mainly and running.
Bright blue. Yeah.
Bright blue, really recognisable. Yeah, not particularly conducive to kicking a football. But I think I got away with it.
I think you did, mate. Okay now? Any aches, any pains?
Wasn't great the next day. Had a little bit of a limp for a day or two, but you kind of get used to that, I think, after a while. I'm getting a little bit old now, and you know, it is what it is. But no, it was good. Really enjoyed it. It kind of gave me a little bit of a thirst for doing that again. It's been a long time, even just doing the warm-up, you know, back and forth, different movements that you do. We had a little game of two-touch, which, again, in trainers, did surprisingly well. Yeah, really enjoyed it. Missed it a bit.
Okay. Mm. New manager, of course, at West Brom too.
Indeed, yes.
Valerian Ismail from Barnsley.
Yeah, interesting situation for, I suppose, him and all the keepers there. Just to talk about that briefly, you know, you have got obviously Sam Johnstone, who you would expect would go somewhere. Last year of his contract, of course, a lot of interest in him. So if that were the case, and of course you've got David Button, Alex Palmer, Josh Griffiths, expected that Josh Griffiths will go out on loan again, did very well last season at Cheltenham. So in theory, it would be obviously David Button and Alex Palmer to remain at West Brom. Of course, Butts has done it, top end of the Championship a lot, so you would think he would start as number one and a good challenge from Alex Palmer.
Okay, well, we are going to reflect on what has been quite an incredible last 16 in the Euros in one moment. But we have a bit of correspondence, Richard, that I'm going to read out to you and I want an answer for, okay? Mm-hmm. This is from Gilles on Twitter or Instagram, I think it was, who says, "Hi, Richard, I'm trawling through your podcasts and posts to find out why Aaron Ramsdale's PSXG are only plus 0.05 per 90 and marry that to the assertion he has high potential. Some people think he's not worth the price Sheffield United would want because of this stat. Could you explain why the two factors aren't mutually exclusive?"
Well, firstly, thanks as always for the message. It's interesting. I mean, first I need to point out, or Phil, I should point out that the expected goals against is just one of many factors that you take into account when you're looking at a goalkeeper, potentially purchasing a goalkeeper. But what I would say about that, the fact that he is slightly above zero suggests that is a positive. You know, to be above that line is actually a positive. And, you know, ordinarily it's not quite as black and white as this, but half the goalies will be above and half will be below. Often more below than above. And I won't go into geeky details as to why that's the case. So the fact that he is above is actually a positive. Of course, you'd love it if he was 8, 10, 12 above, and then it becomes a no-brainer. But I guess the big point with Aaron Ramsdale is the fact that the amount he's been through at his age, what is he, 22, I want to say, still? You know, still so young, and he's got so many Premier League games under his belt. Some really good experiences, obviously a lot of negative ones as well. So in terms of the value, I think I see the value in that he's already built a CV, he's already come through several challenges, so I fully understand why there is such interest in him. And he certainly finished, I think it's fair to say, finished the season brilliantly. You know, I know he was getting a little bit of stick start of the season. We touched on that a lot as to whether that was largely this narrative that's been put around in regards to Dean Henderson and filling the shoes of Dean Henderson. But certainly the way in which he finished the season, I think most Sheffield United fans were very, very happy with him. So yeah, it looks like it's going to be a very interesting few weeks ahead for him.
Good stuff. Thank you for that, Gilles. I think it's Gilles. Just looking at the profile now, there's a Nigerian flag and a Union Jack on his profile. So Gilles is what I'm going for. If you'd like to get in touch with us, very easy to do so on Twitter at GKUnion, hello at goalkeepersunion.net, or on our phone number 07503 673 020. On with the show.
Let's do it.
I think we have excellent defenders in the country. We have a magnificent goalkeeper behind us who every time he's played for, every time he's put on the shirt for England, he's been magnificent. And probably the goalkeeping number one spot for England is the most scrutinised position in world football. So,
yes, that was Harry Maguire after that victory for England yesterday. The most scrutinised position in world football, he is saying, England goalkeeper. And that man, of course, at the moment is Jordan Pickford. Now, Rich, you said last time out that we didn't have too much to say about him thus far in the tournament, and that that was a good thing. Now we have plenty to say about him, and I'd argue that's a monumentally better thing.
Yeah, I think he's been superb the entire tournament. By the way, I really like Harry Maguire. Really like
great
him.
Great interview after the
game,
wasn't it?
Yeah, really good interview. Very considered, very thoughtful. But and actually the fact that he was quite positive about goalkeepers. Maybe that's as simple as it is. Say something positive about goalkeepers and we're friends.
Very easy.
It might just be that. But no, look, I think he's been superb. And look, we've done a lot of these podcasts now. And you think of the amount of times we spoke about Jordan Pickford over the last couple of years and the amount of messages we've had in regards to him, certain performances, maybe where he's been a little bit inconsistent at times for Everton, I think it's fair to say. And look, I'm probably not saying anything different to what other people are saying now, but there is some truth in the fact that when he puts on the England shirt, he's a different animal. You know, he looks so focused. Now, is that to do with the goalkeeper coaching? I'm not sure. He's obviously got a very good relationship with Martin Margotson. I know there's some great stuff going out last night showing that save he made under the bar and how that relates to a lot of the drills that Martin Margotson does, in particular the ones where he's kicking the ball off the cones in order to react at that speed. But look, I just thought not just the two saves, which we will mention. It was more for me just the aura that he's got at the moment. Like you can sense as you're coming out of the tunnel, as he's everything he's doing is with real quality, you know, really focused in everything he's doing. Where there have been times where we spoke on the podcast previously where maybe he's made an error and you see him kind of smile and joke it off, or even when he's got away with one and he's kind of given that impression that it almost doesn't matter. Now, we know it does, and that's obviously maybe an anchor for him, using an NLP term, an anchor for him to get himself back into a good state of mind. But it just feels different. When I'm watching him, I feel so secure watching him yesterday, and I really enjoy watching him. When he's playing like that, the speed at which he's able to move, the decision-making was spot on. The two saves in particular, look, the reaction under the bar, it's one that probably doesn't get the credit that it deserves. For me, that beats most goalkeepers. Flies past them, and it's one of them. We've already seen a few in this tournament where it's flown past the goalkeeper and no one asks a question because it's gone so quickly past them. You just instantly say you just don't have the time to react. But the reaction and the, I suppose the agility would be the word, in order to get up there, and it's exactly what he's doing in training day in, day out. brilliant, brilliant save. And love the one-on-one. I thought the timing of everything, I thought the execution was perfect. You know, ball slid through. He's a couple of yards off his line. When he decides to engage, he engages well, gets to within a couple of yards, makes himself very, very big. Although he's gone to ground, he's still got his chest up. His body weight is forward. He's such a big barrier. If you pause it at point of impact, such a big shape and very, very difficult to score past him. And even the one-on-one with Muller, of course, look, he should have scored. Let's be honest. He should have scored. But even the decision there to come that little bit further down the line and essentially make Muller make a decision. You know, you could argue that he might have even slightly overcovered the other side, knowing that the way Muller's coming through, he's going to have to either pull it across him, which is going to have the curl on it that it did, or he's going to have to slide it past him the other way. So I thought his positioning was spot on, made it difficult for him. Again, should have scored, but certainly did all he could in order to make him miss.
He's talking so much as well, Jordan Pickford. After that particular chance, the Muller miss, he went mental, gave both barrels, I'm presuming, to Raheem Sterling. I think that's who he was shouting at. But he's talking a lot. He's so vocal. There was a moment where you saw, not the old Pickford, the assured Pickford, is what I'm going to say, towards the end, 2-0 up, and he caught the ball, slumped to the ground, and just looked up at the crowd as if to say, yeah, I got this. We're all good. Don't worry about it.
This is the bit that I quite like about him. And do you know what I'd say? And I'm probably miles off here. I'm sure if he listens, and I'm sure he does, of course. Every goalkeeper does. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He'll probably say I'm miles off. But I just wonder, a tournament like this, certain people this is made for. Like, he's a winner and he loves the fact that he's playing in this big tournament. The world is watching. And you can tell he is thriving off it. Whereas, does it get a bit mundane, the day-to-day, the league table, 38 games? I don't know. Do you know? I don't know if that even makes sense. Ordinarily, you'd maybe associate that with an outfield player, you know, where some players they'll talk about when they just don't turn up, you know, and ordinarily that's your tricky winger who, you know, Tuesday night away at Stoke, maybe they don't turn up. But when it's that big game live on Sky, all of a sudden they're star man again. There's almost an element of that to him, I think, which for this is perfect because this is the ultimate stage. He did it last time out. The ultimate stage, and this is exactly what he did. He was superb in that tournament. He's been superb in this.
I think with players with some nations, I felt like it's always been apparent, especially those who play in the Premier League, that it's the opposite. It's always been the opposite for England, that some players who are okay in the Premier League, who maybe have a bit of pressure playing club football, go and play for their countries. Granit Xhaka, for example, in their last 16 tie, his tournament, he's been pretty good. Against France, he was exceptional. You don't see him play like that for Arsenal. It's almost like the pressure's off when he's playing for his country. He's got more freedom. Over the past few years, in recent years, past 20 years, you could say, for England, it's been the opposite. The pressure has been when they play for England, when they play for the country. But now it's just starting to switch. And with Jordan Pickford, it definitely seems like that's the case.
I suppose this comes back to what Maguire said in that interview. It is the most scrutinised position. Because, by the way, don't get me wrong, we're speaking about this and, look, touch wood, this doesn't happen. But, of course, if Jordan Pickford is to make a mistake in one of the next few games, hopefully there are a few more games, and it's a costly mistake, then of course it will go down. Forget all these good games and all these great saves and the fact that four clean sheets in a row, which is incredible, by the way, that all gets forgotten. And of course, like a David Seaman, Ronaldinho, or like a Paul Robinson ball bobbling over his foot, or I don't know, you could name a few more, I'm sure, Rob Green, USA, all of a sudden you become a bit of a footnote in history for the wrong reasons. And that is why it is the most difficult position in English football, because even if we go on and win the World Cup, the chances are it'll be a Harry Kane or a Raheem Sterling that get the majority of the plaudits, and yeah, we'll remember that Jordan Pickford was the goalkeeper. That's what tends to happen with a lot of the, certainly the outfield pundits. You know, I've been listening to a lot of the commentary, and we could do a whole show on Commentary Corner this week, I'm sure, again. Like, it's not as well regarded. You know, even the Jordan Pickford highlights after the show were half an hour after the final whistle. They went through every other player near enough, and it was almost like a little additional section at the end just to say, oh, and by the way, didn't Jordan do well? Well, actually, he did brilliantly. Like, one of those go in, it is a completely different game. We know that. And it's not just that. Again, it's, for me, it's the decision-making. We talk about him playing on the front foot. Distribution was very good, I thought, again, yesterday, generally. Yeah, I just think his all-round game and his persona, more than anything, you do feel so comfortable with him playing tournament football for England.
That second save from Kai Havertz, let's just quickly dwell on that, because the punditry, by the way, after the game, I don't know whether you heard it, but Gary Lineker did say it was straight at him, but hit with such ferocity. I thought, flame and heck, just give him this one, please give him this one. And they were complimenting him. And Rio Ferdinand earlier had spoken about Raheem Sterling and said it's time for respect to be put on this man's name. I think you could argue the same for Jordan Pickford now. Yeah. But I'd misremembered the save on Havertz. It was only after the game that I thought he made that save at 1-0 to England. So he was preventing an equaliser. It was 0-0.
Yeah.
It was 0-0 at that point, which I'd completely misremembered in the drama of the game. So it was an even better save than I originally thought.
And this is where it's so easy now to look at it. And exactly like we've done, great performance from England. Well, of course, if we concede that first goal, the first goal yesterday was always going to be very important. You know, two teams that defensively sound, you know, England only scored two goals in the three games prior to that. If we go 1-0 down in that game, the dynamic of the whole game changes. And when you're playing against, and look, this is a very general comment, but ordinarily, when you are playing against the likes of Germany, Italy, these types of teams, you go 1-0 down. We found it so difficult previously in order to come back and win. The odds of coming back and winning are probably 1 in 20, 1 in 30. Maybe you can take it to extra time penalties if you get the equaliser. But again, your odds of winning the moment you go 1-0 down are so slim. And that's where these small moments can be forgotten to an extent, because naturally it's easy to generalise the game and be great. Clean sheet, 2-0 win against the Germans, first time since 66 in knockout football or whatever it is. And there's so many positives to take, there really are. But for us, and of course that's what we do on this podcast, it's those little moments, like we know as goalkeepers, those little moments that have won the game for England.
And you're right, four clean sheets. You mentioned those, 1966, the first time that has happened at a major international tournament for England. Four clean sheets in the opening four games. So, hey, just lastly on this, great to see David Seaman in the crowd singing along to Three Lions with Ed Sheeran and Bex.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, actually, I've got one more thing I want to mention on this, and this would have not been seen by many, but that's what we do on this podcast. I do want to talk about Manuel Neuer very briefly. Love watching Manuel Neuer play. I was actually saying, I sat with a couple of friends watching it yesterday. I sent your invite. I don't know if you got it. Sorry about that. Post dreadful these days, by the
way. Really is, yeah.
Yeah, and I probably could have gone email or text, but I like old school post. So watching the game with a couple of friends, and I was saying when he's walking out the tunnel, if you could design a goalkeeper, it's probably Manuel Neuer. You know, you look at him, so imposing, even the look, those steely eyes, you know, it's kind of what you want from a goalkeeper. That wasn't actually going to be my point, but that was part of what I wanted to talk about. It was more the first goal. And it was just interesting when they showed it from behind the goal. No one's ever going to talk about Manuel Neuer. But I did find it odd how he effectively went down in installments. Ball was played across. And rather than moving his feet and trying to get to the ball itself and making himself big and be really brave and get in there and really try and crunch everybody and get the ball, he kind of just turned and fallen. Very, very, very strange technique. Now, look, you probably don't save it anyway, let's be honest. But I just wonder whether as that comes across, he could get a step in and maybe just get that little bit closer, because it looked a bit awkward.
France 3, Switzerland 3. Switzerland to win 5-4 on penalties. And what a game, Richard, for goalkeeping it was. What a tournament. What a last 16 for goalkeeping it has been thus far. And let's start with Hugo Lloris. Here, we'll get on to Jan Sommer, but Lloris.
What a summer it's been for goalkeeping.
What a
so
summer,
far.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You should write the scripts.
Thanks.
On this, mate.
Yeah, no, I've thought about getting a job at The Sun or something, maybe.
Nah, there are other better publications out there,
true.
I'm sure.
True. But Lloris.
Yes, the penalty save from Ricardo Rodriguez.
Yeah, a couple of things I want to talk about Lloris. The penalty save, excellent. Look, I thought the timing of dive, which sounds ridiculous, we've been talking about this now on penalties, but we have to, because you do get penalised if you are a centimetre off your line. So even that, you actually watch as the ball struck, he is like a toe on the line as he then gets himself across to his right. But look, very, very good. And at the time, crucial, because it did change the whole flow of the game. And for them to come back and then go 3-1 up, how they didn't see the game out. I mean, they should have, of course. But that moment, and that's where, and we've all had it at some point as a goalkeeper where you know you have something in a game or you do something in a game that completely changes the flow of the game. And you don't know in that moment whether it's going to happen or what it's going to mean. But in that moment, that's exactly what it did. Galvanized the French and they kicked on from there. But the save itself, yeah, excellent. Very, very good. I thought the kidology before the penalty, the way in which he got to his right, and he's kind of like covered both bases where he's gone reasonably high with his dive, but managed to get his hand down. Big, strong hand, got onto the second ball, showed everything that Hugo Lloris is about in terms of power, agility, and making the big save at a big moment.
Yeah, absolutely huge, like you said, at a big moment. And within 4 minutes, they were 2-1 up, at which point you thought, they're going to go on and win the game. They went 3-1 up and you thought they're going to go on and win the game. And quite remarkably, they did not. I mean, it was just staggering. Firstly, actually, before we move on, the red gloves on Hugo Lloris. I don't think I'm a fan.
Why?
He was in the all yellow, wasn't he, the kit, with the red glove. I didn't like the contrast. Thought they looked a bit weird.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, I don't know if you should be talking about fashion. I wish we could take a photo of how you look today. Although you have done your hair today. I'll be honest, you've had a little trim and you're looking sharp. In terms of the apparel, yeah.
Did you go colour-coded when you wore gloves?
Do you know,
it's important, right? I don't know, it's important, the look.
I think now, and obviously we won't name the brands, but of course the bigger brands do the whole boot-glove combo, which I know that the lads love, and probably wasn't that sophisticated back in my day. When I was young, it was always black boots, white gloves, but then when I got to Brentford, it was the white and white. I quite like that look, the white boots, the white gloves, even the white socks, which I think are banned now, but the white socks pulled up with the tape around the socks, so you had like this kind of look, and also that did make your feet look that little bit quicker.
Sorry, white socks are banned?
Well, it used to be we'd have the white socks pulled up and then tape round them just below the shin pad. So effectively, if you're looking from afar, all you can see is the white boots, the white socks up to a point, and then it would be your green socks or whatever it would be. But they did ban the white socks. I'm pretty sure that's still the case. Maybe they've allowed it again, but certainly I know that then there was a following season we couldn't do that anymore. Even the tape was banned. It had to be the same color tape, so you couldn't have the white green contrast. It had to just be the full green sock.
I'm still actually confused. I don't actually know what you're talking about.
Well, no, a lot of players would prefer to wear normal cotton socks than football socks, so they would cut the football socks, cut the feet off effectively, and just have like the tube bit. They'd wear normal white socks and then they'd put that tube above them and connect them with tape because it feels more comfortable to wear trainer socks.
I never knew that.
Well, there you go. Again, added value.
Added value. Mm. I'd be interested to know whether a lot of listeners know that happens.
Obviously now, what's ended up happening, and I don't know too much about this, I'm sure you guys probably know more than me, is it's become a big business. There's a lot of companies out there that do the football white socks. So I'm assuming they must be allowed to do it again, because I know that's become quite a big business where they've got even the socks as parts of the socks that have got different grips and other bits to then maximise how they sit in the boot.
Wow.
Well, there you go.
You learn something new.
Mm.
I wonder if Jan Sommer does just that, because it's a great save, said Roy Keane. An absolutely brilliant save. It's a brilliant save, said Gary Neville. A great, strong hand. They are, of course, talking about his penalty shootout heroics. Kylian Mbappe denied.
Yeah, fantastic. Look, we spoke about one penalty save being excellent. I mean, if you were to judge them against each other, this is ever so slightly more difficult, given the fact it's just that bit higher and he's had to get big, strong left hand to this. But yeah, it's an excellent, excellent save. Again, timed the dive perfectly. I hate the fact that he has to then wait to see if it's actually going to be allowed. Like, just kills the moment a little bit. And I don't know what can be done about that other than scrapping VAR, I guess, would be the obvious solution. You stop shrugging your shoulders. I know, speaking your language, but it is annoying, because it was, you can imagine, we were talking earlier when we were watching some of the footage, and the Swiss equalizer, the third goal, and the feeling that must have been, where touch bang, finish. Also for him knowing that's not going to get disallowed, because there's no worry of offside, there's no concern that it's going to be disallowed for anything. Even the England goal, you know, watch the second goal, and there was that slight moment where you're like, oh, please be given, and we're just waiting. So it was never a full celebration. It's kind of the same with this, and this is the goalkeeping equivalent, where he's made an unbelievable save, you're through, it's done, you should be sprinting off down the tunnel or wherever you want to go and just loving the moment. You know, similar to obviously when I did it against Everton, you're probably going to bring that up, where I knew the moment that happened, it was game over. There was no question as to whether I was off my line, etc., etc. And it was just that brilliant, brilliant feeling that you've got knowing that it's done. He didn't really get that, which is a shame.
Yep, a real shame. A real shame. But we'll move on, shall we, to Croatia 3, Spain.
Stop.
Oh, God.
Not ready to move on.
He's gone rogue again. He's going rogue again.
There's something else I want to talk about. And I did mention to this before the show, so I'm a little bit disappointed you haven't made a note on that iPad of yours. Not iPad, it's a Mac.
Mm.
Yeah, it's stickers all over it. It's a bit like a child. Strange. Yeah, Hugo Lloris. I just wanted to make a note. It's probably not the right word. I'm not going to say touch on, because I know I've been getting a bit of stick for that again this week. I did see on Twitter. Didn't go unnoticed. Didn't like it. Saw it. I thought, do I like it? I thought, no, because then I'm just playing into his hands or their hands. So we're not going to do that. Hugo Lloris, first goal. Look, before I say what I'm about to say, of course, no error, no mistake. Just for me, an interesting one. It's that one where you come off the post, you then come to the middle of the goal as the ball gets crossed in, set, and go back on yourself. And the only question I had was whether he could have got a step in for one, because as the ball's gone in, he's landing effectively from the dive. So he's thrown himself full stretch to his right, hasn't quite got the power. The ball's nestled in the corner and he's landed with the ball going into the net. Again, probably put it out to people to get their thoughts, because it's an interesting one for me, where I do wonder if he doesn't quite go so far across his goal and sets. You know, you talk about the optimum position. Well, given that the ball's coming in from that angle, there's a very good chance it's going to be headed back towards where it came from. I think that's what strikers are taught to do. Whereas the glancing header into the far corner is a little bit more unlikely. So I do just wonder whether he quite got his position spot on. And then I'd ask, if you can get your set as neutral as possible, then you've got the possibility of getting a step back in to go back to your right. Do you give yourself a little bit more chance of making the save? Again, it's a question, and one that I suppose is what we do on the show, in that, of course, the general public, the pundits, the media aren't going to pick up on something like that. But for young goalkeepers out there, it might just be worth looking at it again. Ask yourself the question, is it one where maybe he could have done something slightly different?
Good insight so far, Richard, on this podcast.
Thank you.
Can I move on now? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Croatia 3, Spain 5. And we're going to chuck in one of these.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper, keeper.
So it was Pedri with a 49.4-yard back pass. Unai Simon with a slip of the foot. And Croatia 1-0 up 20 minutes in.
Yeah, no mistake for me.
No error.
No error whatsoever. Let's move on. No, of course, this is not great. Look, the simple word I'll use is concentration. I mean, you could break down the technique. The technique obviously wasn't quite right. I mean, the defender has smashed it back to him. I did hear someone, and I think they've said it to me because they know that ordinarily I'll stick up for goalkeepers. Someone did say to me, well, there's quite a lot of spin on the ball. I mean, there was, but I can't really defend that. Look, for me, it's concentration. It's not an easy ball to deal with, but of course, what ended up happening just wasn't great. But it is a situation or an example of, if that happens to an outfield player, which it does, by the way, quite regularly, the amount of times that players will miscontrol or give away the ball, it's not costly. That will go out for a throw-on or whatever it might be. Look, in this situation, that's where your footwork as a goalkeeper needs to be spot-on with everything. It's those small details that people won't realise, but in the goalkeeper community, you know just how important every single pass is. Even a 10-yard pass, making sure you're playing it to their right foot. You know, all types of distribution, being as spot-on as you possibly can. But quite simply here, it was a slight slip in concentration. That being said, he ended up having a couple of big moments later in the game.
Yeah, he did. Just before we get to those, Guillem Balague, the very good Spanish journalist, did say it's not an accident. Unai Simon in La Liga has the record for mistakes leading to most goals conceded, 8 in a season. He's a goalkeeper who makes mistakes, and a lot of those mistakes come when he's forced to play the ball, which I was quite surprised to hear. And I want to get your opinion on this quote from Dion Dublin as well. I'm not digging him out here. I'm just interested to see what you make of it. He said, if you're in any doubt at all, you make sure you get the biggest part of your body behind the ball. He's not in doubt. That's the thing, is he?
He's not in doubt. And that's, no, it's it. It's like, I remember when I was younger, one of my coaches telling me to never control the ball with the outside of the foot, as an example. So to always control it with your instep, which again does make sense where possible. But look, the goalkeepers are of a level now where they're going to look to control it in the way they control it and look to play like outfield players, probably better than outfield players a lot of the time. Certainly the distribution of a lot of goalkeepers out there, I think, would rival the best central midfielders in the world. So look, I think it's a kind of comment that you can make once a mistake has been made. You know, the classic one will always be when they look to play out, it doesn't work. Oh, I should kick it into row Z. Well, of course, that doesn't make sense, because if I kicked it into row Z every single time, you're not going to be playing at the level that you play at. So yeah, look, it's an easy comment to make once a mistake has been made. And I think that Simon no doubt will look at that situation and maybe consider what he does slightly different next time. But I don't think what he did was wrong. I think another day that hits him on the foot, he controls it well and he plays out, and this isn't a talking point.
Also beautifully goes down as a Pedri own goal.
Yes.
Not an Unai Simon own goal. The second longest range strike in Euros history.
Is that right?
Behind
the one that beat David Marshall.
It is. Well, yes. Patrick Schick. Very good, Richard.
No Schick. Wow.
Luis Enrique, after the game, was in full praise of his goalkeeper. And he said, Unai gave a lesson to kids everywhere. Football is made up of errors, and his reaction, making great saves, not to let your head drop, was an example of why we have such confidence in him.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think it's not one where he's going to come out of that game and be absolutely buzzing. You know, I'm sure every goalkeeper, when you make an error like that, it's going to play on his mind. But I think that is a big, big lesson. They're right. And it's something that we talk about a lot on this podcast, is that ultimately you will make mistakes and you do not know when they're going to come. You can feel fantastic and still make an error or two, or something happen where, and I know we're going to speak about Patricio shortly, and that's going to be a good example where sometimes something might happen that you might not consider a mistake, but everybody else does. But ultimately, all that matters is your reaction, how you bounce back. Are you able to continue to focus on the present moment? Which, in fairness to Simon, he did. You know, he didn't look rattled by that particular moment. We've all seen it where goalkeepers suddenly look like a completely different beast afterwards. It looks like their confidence has been shot. But credit to him, he looked exactly the same after as he did before. And the fact then he was able to make those couple of saves in the end were crucial.
Massive saves. Faultless with his feet thereafter as well, which I think was really huge. And the couple of saves you reference, Andrei Kramaric being denied in extra times, well, it was 3-3 at the time. That was a massive save.
Yeah, excellent save. Look, they both were. The one down to his right in particular, you watch it on the replay and it looks even more impressive when you do see the replay. The speed at which he's able to get down really is a top save. And the one in extra times, I say, in the end, it's a match-winning save. It's always difficult as a keeper. I'd be fascinated to know what rating he got in the paper. And no doubt it would have been a 5 or a 6 because of the error. But actually, you know, you take that error out and it's a 9 or a 10. It was a really good performance. But as mentioned, people will tend to remember the mistake. The good news is, and I guess this also goes back to what we were talking about earlier in the podcast, the fact they won the game, he won't become a footnote in Spanish goalkeeping history now because of that error, which is for him a great thing. And it is. And that's something that is completely out of a goalkeeper's control. But it's so nice that when you do make a big error and you're able then to play the rest of the game well and you get the win, it does get forgotten that little bit quicker.
4.90 on the BBC Sport website.
Oh, there you go.
Just an FYI. Well,
there you go.
The lowest rated player.
Exactly.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. Despite two. No, but that's it. And that's the life of a goalkeeper summed up in 4.90.
Belgium 1, Portugal 0. Thibaut Courtois, solid again. He's having a very good tournament. Had a very good couple of seasons at Real Madrid too. But the goal conceded by Rui Patricio from Thorgan Hazard. It was their only shot on target. Some questionable Ian Wright analysis on this one.
Yeah. Look, I've watched this so many times and you almost know what the comments are going to be before, as soon as you see it go in, you know what they're going to say, which is, oh, he could definitely do better. Oh, it's moved a little bit, but keeper will be disappointed. Look, keeper's always disappointed. You let in a goal, you're disappointed. But the key for me is that you see the moment the ball struck, positioning's good, set position's good. The ball is going to his right hand side. Now, if you stop it a millisecond after it's struck, it's going to his right hand side, which means your initial movement needs to be to the right. The second you've done that, you know, and effectively the ball then comes back on you, it doesn't become a shot from 25 yards anymore. It becomes a shot from 7 yards and it's fired to your left. You've now got to shift your body weight left, get back and get a firm hand to it. It's a very, very difficult thing to do. Now, do I believe this can be saved? Yeah, I'm sure there's someone out there that has got the speed at which they can get back and get a hand and make a save. Do I think it should be saved? No. I don't. I think the movement is enough to make it that difficult that I wouldn't put this down as an error. And I think had this been a shot from 7 yards and just been fired hard to his left and beat him in the way that it did, we don't question it. And that's effectively what's happened.
One more name to mention here. We've not mentioned him yet. Dan Backman.
Yeah.
We tried to get through every goalkeeper who has performed at the Euros. Some season he's had and very nearly a Euros quarterfinalist.
Yeah. No, look, phenomenal. It's going to be really, really interesting going into next season at Watford because he has effectively not come from nowhere, of course. Like he was a very, very good goalkeeper as backup to Ben, but patiently waiting for his chance. And yeah, talk about taking your chance at Watford. The number of games he played, very few defeats for a start in the games that he played. The mentality shown was superb. And he's shown that throughout this tournament as well. And I think that going into next season, I think if you're Dan Backman, and we're saying this as close friends of Ben Foster, and you know I'm the biggest Ben Foster fan, but I think if you are Dan Backman right now, you would feel that you've earned the right to be given first shot at the shirt going into the Premier League. That being said, of course, having Ben Foster breathing down your neck, it's going to be a really fascinating tussle and one that you hope brings the best out of both of them, because certainly whoever does play for Watford this season, you feel like they're going to need to be on top form.
G
GKs on the way. I say GKs on the way. GKs on the way. I say GKs on the way. Yes, a massive, massive few days for goalkeeping movement. Here we go. Well, look, it's finally caught light. We knew it would, Matthew. We spoke about this before and kind of feel like we've been building up to it week after week, saying it's about to get going, it's about to get going, and nothing's happened. What I would say is that at the very top end, there's a lot of rumours surrounding Aaron Ramsdale, there's a lot of rumours surrounding Sam Johnson. You do just wonder whether some of the big, big ones are going to happen post-Euros, potentially. So none of them yet necessarily, certainly Premier League ones, but there are some good Championship League One, League Two ones that we'll mention now. So Marco Morosi, the first one, he has left Coventry to go to Shrewsbury. So he'll no doubt fight out with Harry Burgoyne, who finished the season very well for Shrews. Johnny Maxted has gone from Exeter to Northampton on a permanent deal. Nathan Bishop, of course, was at Southend previously, went to Manchester United, signed by Manchester United, hasn't played for a little while now, but has got a very good loan to Mansfield. You'd think he would be number one. However, George Shelvey has also gone on loan from Forest to Mansfield. Quite unusual to have two lone goalkeepers at a club. Given that you're only allowed a certain amount of loans per team, to use two on goalkeepers is really unusual. But yes, George Shelvey has gone from Forest to Mansfield. And of course, that means our friend Aidan Stone has gone from Mansfield and he's ended up at Port Vale. So Port Vale, who now have Lucas Coverland, will also have Aidan Stone to fight out for number one spot there. Joel Dixon, good move for him, gone from Barrow to Bolton. Be an interesting fight, that one. Of course, Joel Dixon knows the Bolton manager very well and no doubt will be giving Mr. Jilks a run for his money at Bolton. Nathan Baxter, another loan for him. Interesting loan for Nathan Baxter. So he's gone in at Hull and it's what Nathan's done a couple of times where he goes in to compete for that shirt. But credit to Nathan, pretty much everywhere he's gone, whether it was Met Police back in the day or Woking, Yeovil, of course, Ross County last season, Accrington, now Hull. Made him to have had that many loans at his age. But no doubt he will go in and fight Matt Ingram for that number one shirt. Craig McGillivray, of course, released by Portsmouth. Bit of a surprise this, and there's been a lot of positive pieces about Craig in the past few days. But he's gone to another big club in League One in Charlton, which of course means that Mr. Amos has left Charlton and gone to Wigan. Wigan seem to be giving it a real go this year. Vaclav Hladký, arguably the standout performer in League Two, alongside Lawrence Vigourou, I'd say. Certainly two of the best goalkeepers in League Two, it's fair to say. Well, Vaclav, I always get this wrong. I'm going to go Vaclav. He has gone from Salford to Ipswich. Good signing there for Ipswich. Di Cornell, who was at Ipswich, has gone to Peterborough. So step up for him in terms of league. He will be fighting it out at Peterborough with Christy Pym for that first team spot. A couple more to mention, Matthew. I know it seems like we've had loads already, but Ellery Balcom has gone on loan from Brentford to Burton. A really good League One loan for him. Of course, he will have worked with Andy Quay at Brentford. So a good opportunity here for him to kick on after his loan at Doncaster. And finally, Mr. Jack Bonham, of course, with Gillingham, someone that I know very well, worked closely with. He has left Gillingham and he has joined Stoke. So he will be fighting it out with Adam Davis. Joe Bursic, of course, both of them had very good seasons last season. So once again, a strong goalkeeping department at Stoke.
Very good, Richard. It is ramping up, isn't it? A fair few more there than in previous podcasts.
What was that, 13, 12, 13? And that we only did the last podcast a few days ago. So it tends to be this week. So of course, pre-season for most clubs, certainly Championship and below, will start, or normally has started Monday this week, latest Thursday this week. So I guess a lot of the teams want to have a goalkeeper in the building by the start of pre-season. It helps. So, it didn't surprise me that we saw as much last week. I think we'll see, maybe not similar, but we'll see a good number again over the next few days as well.
Just a couple I want to pick up on there. Firstly, buzzing for Hladký. Great move for him. Delighted. A friend of the podcast now. So that's a great move. Excited to see what's going to happen at Ipswich next season. And Jack Bonham. So Gillingham to Stoke. He was number one at Gillingham. He's going into Stoke, I'm presuming, certainly not as a one, not as a two yet, but as a number three.
So initially, yeah, the thinking behind this, and as I mentioned, someone I work very closely with, initially he'll be going in as a three. Like I say, you've got two very highly rated goalkeepers there. But the thinking behind it is that there's several different routes to get to where you want to get to. And this isn't necessarily just for Jack. I guess this is a general one for goalkeepers everywhere. That, of course, every goalkeeper wants to play in the Premier League. That's always the dream, to play at the very highest level you can. Now, how do you get there? Well, if you're at a top club already and you're going out on loans, then effectively you're already where you need to be. If you're at a Man City, Man United, Liverpool, wherever it might be, and you're going out on loans, all you've really got to do is work internally, just find a way into that first team, and you're exactly where you need to be. If you're at a League One club, the argument would be, are you at a League One club that's going to climb the levels? You know, are Gillingham going to get into the Championship next season? They might do, but the odds, according to the bookies, it's unlikely. So then you're trying to find a club maybe that's already in the Championship or one that you feel is going to go to the Championship. So you would think that Stoke, of course, got good backing with Bet365, you know, a very stable club in the Championship, certainly, and one that you would think in time are going to get back to the Premier League, and the fact that, you know, world-class facilities, training, playing with better players, etc., it will in theory only improve you, and the fact that Jack's played the last four seasons consistently, built up a great CV, he's done very well. I think he's got the most clean sheets in League One over the last couple of years in particular. So for him, it just felt right now to get yourself back into an environment like that and try and work internally. Now, that might be that he has to be a number three for a period of time, but of course if he does well enough, that could soon become a number two. And if you are a number two, then as we've seen, you just don't know when your opportunity might come.
Okay, anything more to add, Richard?
Oof, put me on the spot there. I mean, we've got a big few days ahead, a couple of days now to relax, and then the quarterfinals kick off. I've got a feeling we're going to be doing another show straight after the quarterfinals.
We will, yes, the day after the final quarterfinal.
Absolutely.
Lovely. Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers.
Wait.